Welcome, members and guests, to the April 22nd program of the City Club of Eugene Candidate Forum for House District 14. I'm Joel Curran, Secretary of the City Club. Our sponsors today are Sacred Earth Botanicals, professional massage therapy products with a focus on certified organic ingredients, environmentally friendly packaging, and sustainable business practices. PackInfo Internet Solutions, the oldest, fastest, friendliest, and most reliable internet solution provider in Lane County, and the UO Academic Extension, advancing the UO mission in innovative teaching, discovery, and service by creating entrepreneurial formats, learning to access the university's community of scholars beyond conventional campus boundaries. We'd also like to thank KPFF Consulting Engineers for supplying our office space, KLCC Radio for airing these programs 6:30 on Monday evenings, and for archiving podcasts on their website. We'd also like to thank Community Television of Lane County for televising recent City Club programs Monday through Friday at noon, Saturday at 10:30 a.m., and Sunday at 9 p.m. We host nearly 50 original, nonpartisan issue programs every year, and today is our 27th program in our 2015-2016 programming year. If you believe that civic engagement is the lifeblood of democracy, please join us. We welcome anyone who has a stake in the community. And now, the program. This is the sixth of eight scheduled forums intended to provide Lane County voters with the opportunity to learn more about the candidates running for several contested races in the May 17th primary election. These events are sponsored by the City Club of Eugene, the League of Women Voters, the League of United Latin American Citizens of Lane County, known as LULAC, the Eugene Springfield National Association of Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, Wayne Morse Family Farm, AARP of Oregon, Springfield City Club, Wildish Community Theater, and several neighborhood associations, including Jefferson West Side Neighbors and Southeast Neighbors. Today's moderator is Claude Offenbacher. Claude is a former school superintendent of three Oregon districts, vice president of the Very Little Theater, and a retired KLCC news reporter and program host. Claude?
Thank you so much, Joel, and welcome to our audiences here at the UO Baker Center in downtown Eugene and listening on KLCC. I am pleased to introduce the candidates competing in the May 17th primaries for their party's nomination for the Oregon Legislature's 14th district seat. House District 14 is comprised of West Eugene, including Bethel and Santa Clara and Junction City. With us are Democrats Julie Fahey and James I. Manning, Jr., and Republican Aaron Cluett. Republican candidate Kathy Lamberg declined to join us today. Please join me in welcoming our candidates. The League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan political organization, encourages informed and active participation in government, works to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influences public policy through education and advocacy. The League of Women Voters of Lane County does not support or oppose any political party or candidate. The League works to promote political responsibility through informed and active participation in government and to act on selected governmental issues. The rules for today's forum are as follows. The debate will begin with an opening statement by each candidate for a maximum of 1 minute. Following the opening statement in the first session, there will be questions from the moderator and questions that were submitted by the sponsors of this debate. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question. The second portion of the forum will consist of questions from the audience, which will be vetted by the League of Women Voters. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the question. There are 3x5 cards available around the room. Please write your question on the card and hold them in the air. A volunteer will be by to pick them up. If you need a card, please raise your hand, and a volunteer will provide you with one. We'll close the forum by giving the candidates 1.5 minutes for a closing, 1.5 minutes for a closing statement. I think that's been changed to 1 minute, actually. Please hold your applause for your candidates so that we may address as many questions as possible. Candidates have drawn numbers to determine the order of questioning, and we'll begin with opening statements. And the first one up for us is James Manning.
Okay, thank you. So I guess we'll let me know when I get ready to time. Say go. Oh, well, first off, let me thank the League of Women Voters and the sponsor units and City Club for this opportunity. My name is James Manning, and this campaign, this election is not about politics. This election is about representing who will better represent the people in House District 14. In a time that I've been out knocking on doors, I get a common question. How long have you lived in the district? And I think that's a fair question. So I retired from the United States Army after 24 years of active duty service. And during that time, I've served the community in a lot of ways as a neighbor. We purchased our home in Bethel, and I've lived there for 9 years. I have been appointed by Governor Kitzhaber and reappointed by Governor Brown to chair the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs, where I work with Commission on Women Affairs to make sure that we have the right things in place to promote women's equality, equal pay. And those work that I've did in that area has earned me the endorsement of NARAL Pro Choice and Mother PAC. Thank you.
Julie Fahey.
Hello, I'm Julie Fahey, and I'm running to be the next state representative in House District 14. I'm running because I want Oregon to be a place where everyone who works hard has a fair shot to get ahead in life, where our policies support economic security and opportunity for working families in the middle class. In my professional life, I'm a nonprofit and business consultant, which means that I work with companies on how to hire the right kind of people, how to pay your workers fairly, and how to offer good benefits and training. I've been doing that work for over 15 years, and about 10 years ago, I started a business with a partner of mine. So I've been living the life of a small business person and entrepreneur. I'm proud to be a lifelong Democrat and advocate for policies that strengthen the middle class. For several years, I served as the chair of the Lane County Democrats, working to organize the progressive community here locally and fight to get elected candidates who will fight for progressive causes. I'm looking forward to continuing that work at the state level. Thank you.
And Aaron Kluwit.
Hello, everybody. Sorry, I'm trying to get over a cold that I've recently been suffering for the past week. But my name is Aaron Kluwit, and I live in Junction City. And I am with the other running for House District 14. My campaign is pretty much consisting of education and for business. I think that schools should be going 5 days a week. I think that we need to do more for infrastructure, and I think we need to do more for schools as they deteriorate across this great state, and I don't think we're doing enough. I think that our high school graduation rate at 68% right now is dismal, and we're not doing enough for our future. We're not doing enough for our children, and that's why I'm running. Thank you.
Well, Aaron, your comments lead right into my first question, and I'm going to ask Julie to be the first responder to that question. Oregon elementary class sizes have exploded. Our high school completion rate is hurting badly, and we have a more than $2 billion biennium shortfall of what the state's quality education model calls for. What do you propose we do about it, and do you support Measure 28, which would increase corporate taxes to mitigate the shortfall? Julie.
Thank you. I would also add to that long list of things that our Oregon's school year is one of the shortest in the entire country. And we know that time in classroom is one of the most important things that contributes to student learning. So it's a significant problem, and it will always be a priority of mine to fight for full funding for our education system. We have the quality education model has existed since 1999, and we have never funded to the level it requires. We define, here are our educational goals, here's what we need to do, the programs and services to fund those goals, and here's the amount of funding that we need. So I am, because of those reasons, I am in support of Initiative Petition 28. That would raise the corporate minimum tax rate on corporations above $25 million in revenue. and would devote that a portion of that funding to schools. It is the real opportunity we have to make a meaningful investment in our schools. Thank you.
And each of our candidates will have an opportunity to answer each of the questions. So, Aaron, you're up next.
This is for IP 28.
Yes, and just the general situation with schools, what you do to propose to improve our school situation generally, and also how you feel about Measure 28.
So, my position on IP 28 is ideally it's a great idea, but the majority of the funds that you see for IP 28 is going into the general funds. The problem with that is there's nothing that can allocate those funds to education. If it goes into the general funds, it's going to be used for other things, such as employee compensation or for the PERS package. It will not be going to what it's intended for. And that's why I do not support IP 28.
And James.
Well, thank you. I know quite a bit about this issue because currently I chair the Bethel School District Budget Committee. This is my second term as a member of the Bethel School District Budget Committee. So I also have intimate knowledge of all of the programs, the things that are affecting our students, large classroom sizes. We have one teacher to 35 to 40 students. That's not sustainable. We have to replace education with putting shop classes back in there. We have to do better by putting in the performing arts back in there. And we have to apprenticeship programs in order to elevate that. So the question is whether or not I support IP 28. I think IP 28, the intent is to have accountable those corporations out of state pay their fair share, and I will support that. And additionally, I think that we need to do a better job because my focus is on education. I believe it's a good thing to do, and I will be fighting for that when you send me to Salem.
I'm going to remind our candidates that each question is going to be posed to each of them, so you might be listening. Even though the first person up this time is going to be Aaron, and the question is, unemployment is down and Oregon's economy continues to improve, but financial stability remains challenging for many individuals and families. What is your legislative platform to address jobs and wages?
We need to go... As a state, we need to do more with bringing business to the state. Unfortunately, punishing businesses, increasing corporate taxes is not the answer. We need to do something where we are actually physically going out and bringing in the business. Like Jay with Winnebago, bringing in Winnebago into Junction City, we need to do more of that. We need to do more to have higher paying jobs, to bring people out of the position where they're in, and to make them better off. I forgot where I was. I apologize. I think that I have to go. So sorry about that.
James, your feelings about your legislative platform where you would be elected on jobs and wages.
Excellent. Okay, well, let me tell you something what I have been doing about this measure is that, one, as your eWeb commissioner, I was elected in 2012. I got elected with over 98% of the votes. And since I've been in eWeb, I started a internship program with students at Calipoya High School where they're going to eWeb, they're interning, and they're getting paid. I am trying to set forward working with Bureau of Labor and Industries to make sure that we have apprenticeship programs that we can bring here to provide our kids with the necessary tools to go into these good labor jobs. To learn these acquired skills. In 5 years, eWeb is going to have a huge turnover. I am working to create that new workforce right here with the kids in our community. I think it's the right thing to do, and those jobs are long-term and they're sustainable. This is some of the things that I've been doing, and I will continue to do for that and fight for those when you send me to Salem because I think I'm the right person for this.
Julie, you're a legislative platform to address jobs and wages.
Well, you're absolutely right. Our unemployment rate is down, but wages have not kept up. So many families are still struggling and still feeling the pinch of, even though more people are back to work, they're not making the enough money they need to make ends meet. So there's a number of things that we can do about that around workplace policies that focus on affordable child care and making sure folks have paid family and medical leave insurance. But specifically related to jobs, I think I've worked in the private sector for 15 years, and so we need to make sure that businesses have the things that they need to start up and to grow. And so those things are, people who have the skills that they need to do their jobs, access to capital and land. So one of the things that I would love to work on at the state legislative level is the state business development organization has several different loan funds that they use to help businesses when they're just starting up or when they're growing. I want to make sure we're removing the restrictions that to access those loan funds, which are only available to certain types of businesses. So we could look at making sure more types have access to that capital. Thank you.
Moving on to rural concerns, if elected to represent Oregon House District 14, what specific actions would you take to support farmers and agricultural and food businesses? And we'll start this time with James.
Excellent. Here are some of the things that I've been doing, especially in our rural communities. The first thing that I've done is advocated to make sure that the women that are in abusive situations now have easier, faster access to restraining orders and remove weapons and stuff from those abusers in the household. I've talked to a number of farmers, and one of the things, common theme is that we have an aging workforce. I have put forth ideas on how to get our young students involved in agriculture to be the next farmers, to be the next ranchers, because if we don't prepare the kids right now, then we're not only going to lose a very vital part of our economy and our system, but we're not going to give the kids an opportunity to expand into some of those areas that they would be thriving to benefit. So I would put forth another effort on making sure that we prepare the farmers with students that are willing and look to train it to become the next agriculture or the farmers in our area. And not only that, there's an opportunity for veterans that are coming back to provide some chances for them as well. Thank you.
Aaron, your thoughts on supporting farmers and agricultural and food businesses?
We need to do more for our farmers. The farmers that we have, they're tight, their budgets are shrinking. Just things are not the way that they used to be. We need to do more for making sure that they have the water and not tax wells. We need to do more for them as far as increasing, just increasing their marketability. Not just the ones that have the farmers markets, but the ones that are working in the back. I'll give you an example. So those farmers that do hay production for China, those farmers that do the milk production, we need to make sure that we are involved and that we are assisting them and not setting up regulations that are restricting them or taking away from their profits. Thank you.
And Julie?
So I grew up in a rural area in a small farming community. So I think one of the most important things that a legislator can bring relative to farmers in the rural area is just a perspective and not to forget that a huge proportion of Oregon is rural farming communities. So a piece of that is just making sure we keep those folks in mind when we're drafting policy at the state level, that our policies are not just focused on the Portland area and the Eugene-Springfield area. I think there's the other piece about farming and how to support farmers. The cannabis production is an important part of our economy right now, and it will only continue to grow as more states legalize and perhaps at the federal level long term, cannabis is legalized. So making sure that our cannabis farmers can take advantage of that economic opportunity and that we can bring that incorporate those dollars into Oregon's economy and make sure that we're taking full advantage of that opportunity as a cash crop. Thank you.
And Julie, you can stay right at the microphone. You're going to go first on this question. If elected, what committee or committees would you prefer to serve on and why?
Well, for me, the most natural fit with my background and my experience would be the Business and Labor Committee. I've worked for 15 years in the private sector, helping companies, grow their workforce, making sure that their workforce has the skills that they need, and working specifically with businesses on implementing policies and benefits that support their workers. So that would definitely be the committee I'd want to serve on. I would love to work on particular issues on those committees. One issue that I'm passionate about is paid family and medical leave insurance for workers. We've had, there are five other states that have passed some form of policy that offers paid leave when you have a baby or when a major illness in your family. And Oregon can definitely be the sixth state next year. So that's something that I would love to work on in that committee. It's long past time that we give workers some access to paid time off when they have a baby to bond with their child. Thank you.
James, the committees that interest you and that you'd want to serve on?
Definitely the Education Committee, because, again, the work that I've been doing in the community to promote full funding of pre-K, K through 12 programs, to make sure that we put shop classes back in, make sure that we also promote the performing arts, all those things that are necessary. I would also seek the Ways and Means Committee. Probably won't get that, but if I don't get that, then I will be looking at the Rules Committee for the Ways and Means Committee. I think that to make sure that we're doing the right oversight is very important. Another one is veterans, of course. Veterans issues are very concerning to me because of the lack of fundings that we are having. And so we have so many veterans that have served our communities and are not getting the medical benefits that they need. And that extends over to their families as well. So those are two or three of the top jobs that I would like to have. Ways and Means, I definitely would want that, but probably won't get it. But the Rules Committee is just as important, because we got to make sure that they are doing the right thing at the right time and we have complete transparency and oversight.
Okay, and James, we're going to keep you right up there for the next question. Oh, we have Aaron still. I'm sorry, Aaron. Didn't mean to leave you out. Committees that you'd want to serve on.
The main committee that I would like to serve on is, of course, education. I think that we're just not doing enough. And I think if you looked at the last short session, they just had very minimal issues going on education, name changes, what have you. There is nobody there to get mad and frustrated and start kicking and screaming. And that's exactly what I plan on doing. Thank you.
We'll keep you up there, Aaron, since I almost neglected you last time. We've had a lot of questions from our sponsors, and we're going to turn now to some of the questions from our audience here. Why are you the best choice for this position?
Wow. You know what? When I look across at everybody, you got some great choices. You have excellent choices. You have a true leader right here standing before you, a man that knows the community, that does well for the community, somebody that is there. You have Julie Fahey, who's founding a company and a working woman, and amazing. You have Kathy Lamberg that's out there. She's smart, educated. She's beautiful. And then you have me. But you have plenty of great choices. And we all have our specific preferences and our own agendas. And so for those that think that education is important, I will be your man. Thank you.
And Julie, why are you the best choice?
Well, I'm the best choice because I will fight for education. I will fight. I know that strong schools and good teachers have the power to change lives. So I'm proud to be endorsed by the Eugene Education Association, by former Oregon Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden, and by several local school board members. So I will fight for making sure we have full funding for our system and making sure that those funds are spent wisely. I'm also proud to be the only candidate in this race endorsed by the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club. I will fight for our environment in a way that will make sure that we're combating climate change and that we're preserving our clean air and water. And finally, I'm proud to be the only candidate endorsed by Basic Rights Oregon Equality PAC. I promise to be a tireless voice against discrimination in all of its forms. So the progressive community is supporting me. I have endorsements from a variety of organizations because they know that I will fight for the causes that matter and the voices of the people in my district. Thank you.
And James.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty sure that you would all agree that based on my contributions, my leadership here in the community, the things that I've been fighting for, I'm not trying to do something. I have already been doing it. I have a reputation here that makes sure I fight for a quality education, make sure that our children are receiving the best quality education. I've also been working to make sure that women are treated fair and equally, make sure that they have fair pay, equal pay, and also pro-choice. And also, which you gave me the endorsements of NORAL, Pro-Choice, Oregon, and also the Mother Pack. So endorsements are great, but what you have actually done in the community, I think, is really important. I support those programs that's going to move Eugene House District 14 forward. It's not about politics. It's about the people. And I think so many times that politics seem to overshadow the people and people needs. And I think once we go back to that, find out what are the needs of the people and start focusing on what's best for the people, then we will be a better organization and we'll be a much better Oregon for all.
James, you can stay at the microphone. There have been some references already to concerns about discrimination. Here's a question from the audience on that topic. Latinos are one of the largest growing populations in Lane County, specifically in your House district. How are you prepared to ensure that Latinos are not harassed or discriminated against?
Excellent. I served 6 years on the police commission, and part of that 6 years I was on police commission, we did outreach to Central Latino Americano, where we had talked to them about finding how we can improve police and community relationship. We got a lot of great movement in that area. We did some things that came up with a policy. Now it's called professional conduct policy. That policy prohibits police officers from engaging in discrimination based on color, creed, sexual preference, and a whole host of socioeconomic status. I shared that information with our legislators, and now that information, prohibited profiling by law enforcement, is now part of House Bill 2002, which means that no state agencies, based on the color or your sexual preference or your religious beliefs, can be profiled as a basis for police stops. So that's one of the things I've been moving. And also, I work with the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs to make sure, because most of the time, those issues that they're dealing with are common across all spectrums. And I've been working to make sure that we are pursuing equity at all levels of government.
Julie, assuring that the Latinos are fairly treated?
Sure. So the Latino community, like many other communities of color, faces a real challenge with racial profiling from law enforcement. So last year, House Bill 2002 was passed, which outlaws racial profiling. That was a very important first step. But we know that just outlawing something doesn't mean that it doesn't continue to happen. So the Department of Justice created a work group to study the issue and make specific recommendations on what are the actions that the legislature should take to further, you know, work against racial profiling. So they issued some initial recommendations, and their final recommendations are going to come out hopefully later this year, with the intention of the legislature taking up some of those issues next year. I would love to work on some of those recommendations. Some of the things I'd like to see from them are recommendations on improved training for the police, on better reporting and responsiveness to racial profiling complaints, and then better collection and reporting of stop data. Thanks.
And Aaron.
For Hispanics in the community, I think that, when I was at Pepsi about 5 years ago, I was president of RISE, which was an employee network and inclusion program, or basically we worked on ensuring inclusion and a diversity-free work zone. And so one of the things that we worked with was promoting different cultures and ensuring that discrimination wasn't a factor. I plan on bringing that same hope and that same discipline to office. And I plan on working with the Hispanic community and ensuring that they're growing within the community. I know in Junction City we have a lot, I think that we need to work with schooling, ensuring that children that are speaking Spanish primarily, that, you know, we're able to assist them in their education path, and not just having English-only schooling. I think that sorry.
Thank you. We'll let you finish a sentence when the bell rings. So, you're listening to a forum with the candidates for the Oregon Legislature's 14th district seat on KLCC.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Here's another question from the audience, and we'll start with Julie responding to this one. State government doesn't have enough revenue. How can you fix that?
I think a big part of that will be, you know, the initiative petition 28 that'll be on the ballot this fall. So that petition, that has the potential to raise a substantial amount of revenue that would be devoted to education, healthcare, and senior services. So that's a piece of the puzzle. I also would love to see comprehensive revenue reform at the state level. When you look at our tax structure, individuals in Oregon, all of our taxes included, income taxes, property taxes, all the taxes that individuals pay, we are slightly higher than the national average in terms of if you look at what a typical individual in other states pay. When you look at what the typical corporation pays, income tax, property tax, we're actually one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in terms of the overall total tax burden for corporations. So right now, our system is pretty unbalanced. Individuals are up here and corporations are down here. So with comprehensive revenue reform and with Initiative Petition 28, we could maybe shift that balance a little bit more and make sure that corporations are paying their fair share.
Aaron.
We have the largest demographic that's about to retire or work considerably less. And with that, a lot of jobs are going to be open. But unfortunately, right now, is we don't have the people to backfill those positions. Everybody that needs a job, that wants a good paying job, they're either moving to Washington or California. We're not doing enough to keep those workers here. And with that largest demographic about to retire, our revenue is going to get worse and worse and worse. So we need to be more proactive in bringing business here, bringing people back to Oregon, so that the revenue crisis is not such a crisis anymore, and that we're able to support those individuals that are retiring, and that we are able to support our government. Thank you.
James, your revenue fix?
Okay, this is a pretty complex issue, and it requires more than just a couple of people sitting down. We have to make sure that we engage everybody in this process. That means that we have to bring business in, have a seat at the table, because this is just one thing. If we don't come to some kind of agreement, then we're going to have shortfall. This thing is going to continue on. As a mediator, I have the ability, and I've demonstrated that time and time, where I'm able to bring people in an organization from polar opposite ends to the middle to find out what those things are important. And what the common thing about that is that in order to create jobs, then we need better improvements on apprenticeship programs, which I have been working with the Bureau of Labor and Industries to do that. We have to make sure that we prepare the next labor force, and we have to do that right here. There are a number of businesses that are concerned that there are no workers. So in order for us to make the economy go, then we have to do more investments in local businesses. We got to help them grow, because those are the ones that's going to be the life driving blood of the economy. So more investment in local business, and then we have to have a larger conversation with everybody at the table, make sure everybody is given their fair share.
And Julie. Oh, you've already spoken. All right. On to the next. On to the next. Next question from our audience here is, how will you work with both major parties in the Capitol to assure a more functional session in 2017? And we'll start with Aaron on this one.
I pretty much have kind of two agenda items. And I think those two agenda items are, one, my key platform. But two, I think that we can all agree on that education and business is the top priority. I think the way that we go about it is different, but I'm into inclusion. I think that we need to get together and discuss. I think we need to get together and have conversations on how we can fix our education system, how we can fix business, how we can fix our economy. And I don't think we have that right now. Right now, we have a legislature that is making laws by themselves, and they're not allowing us to vote on them. I think that our current legislature just is bad, just to put it plainly. But I think that we need to have more conversation. We need to have more out there. We need to bring stuff to the voters and not just make opinions for them. Thank you.
James, getting our two parties to work more closely together.
Okay, so I think I mentioned a little bit, as a certified mediator, I have done a lot of work in Salem to make sure we have bipartisan support. That's why a lot of bills got passed in this short session, because people were able to come to the table and find out what are those things that are common to us here in our society. How can we make life better for people? So I've demonstrated that over time, and not only that is that I talk to everyone when I go up to Salem, because as an advocacy chair, it's important that I reach out to everyone to make make sure that we are pushing for the right thing, to make sure equal pay for women's jobs, to make sure that we mend the gap in health care. Those things that are really important. But then again, you know, it's got to come back to it. Each time I go there, you have to put a face on things. It's not about politics. It's about the people that we're serving. And as long as we stay focused on that, then we'll be able to share in those common things to help move things forward. That's what's important, not politics. It's people. And I have demonstrated that I am willing to serve, and I have served the people of this House District and of this city, too, for years. It's the right thing to do.
Julie.
Well, this actually touches on one of the reasons why I'm running for office. I actually think that I bring a relatively unique perspective to the legislature. I'm a progressive and have fought for progressive causes and policies for years, things like paid sick leave and a higher minimum wage and affordable child care. But I'm also someone who has years of experience in the private sector and the business community. So I have actually helped businesses implement some of the policies that get passed at the legislature. And so that unique perspective of being someone with progressive values, but also experience in speaking the language of the business community, I think that will be very helpful in terms of bringing partisanship together, bringing the parties together, bringing the both sides of the conversation together. So I hope to bring that perspective to the legislature in the 2017 session.
Here's a question that's been of important concern to an awful lot of people. What are your thoughts on climate change? And let's start with James on this one.
You know, climate change is a real serious issue. Now, let me tell you a little bit of something what I've been doing as EWEB. I want to make sure, as an EWEB commissioner, I wanted to make sure that we have the best clean water in the nation. I want to make sure that we have reliable, renewable utilities and stuff. So we are pretty green. We use hydroelectricity. We use solar and wind power in order to curb carbon emissions out of the area. And I've also worked as a chair of the Advocacy Commission. I work with the Department of Environmental Quality about toxin air pollutants that's going up into the air. In particular, I visit the Train Song area where I was once out there pulling up grass doing beautification. And I noticed that we have diesels over there that's just this idling there, and it's spewing all this these toxins up in there. And the kids over in that area are being affected by the high rates of asthma. I know what's going on in my House District because I'm on the ground. And I'm talking to people. That's one of the very distinct differences between me and a lot of other people, because I actually care and I get down there and I get busy with them.
Aaron.
For the past 5 years, I worked at a metal recycler, and I got to see a lot of that was out there, and a lot was basically recycled. I think we need to do more. One is for the deposit for the aluminum cans and for the bottles. I think that you know, it's a great idea that we up it to 10 cents, but I think for those individuals that are not participating in the program, that they need to be taxed 10 cents for every bottle that they have in Oregon or that they're selling. So what you have is you have cans and little plastic bottles that since they have no redemption value, people are just throwing them away. And that's not something that's helping our economy. Other things that we need to do is we need to manage the recycling a little bit better so that everybody, not just non-ferrous and ferrous or what have you, but everybody is turning in an ID and every piece of metal is being recorded. That way it will reduce theft. It will broaden our environmental standards. Thank you.
Julie, your thoughts on climate change?
So I believe that climate change is one of the greatest challenges we face in our time, and that as Oregonians, we have a moral imperative to do what we can to fight it. We've had some great progress this year. Just last month, the legislature passed the bill that will take coal out of our power supply by 2030 and requires that half of our power supply be made up of renewable energy by 2040. So that was great progress and really exciting to see, first of its kind legislation in the country. But we have so much more to do. And the Healthy Climate Act, which is a bill that will implement a cap and invest program that prices carbon in a way similar to the way California does it. That bill has been in front of the legislature, was not able to pass this session, but will definitely come before us again in 2017. And I would love to work on a bill like that. Again, I'm the only candidate endorsed by the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club because they know how strongly committed I am to fighting climate change.
Julie, you can stay up there. We're taking questions from our audience here, and I'm going to call this the Bernie Sanders question. How many corporate donors do you have?
I don't have any corporate donors, so that question was easy. I'm very proud to have built a grassroots network of financial support. I have 326 individual contributors, and I think that sends the message that I have a broad base of financial support, and the typical median contribution to my campaign is $50. So for me, it's very important not only to win this race, but also to win it in the right way. And that means, you know, being conscious of who the people are that are funding my campaign.
And James.
You know, it seems like everywhere I go, there are certain people that travel and they ask that exact same question. So I'm not quite sure what the intent is behind that. But I can tell you that I receive contributions from all spectrums because people believe in what I'm doing. They believe in what I've been doing and how I have showed care in the community. I think that's what's mostly important. Now, what are my, I have no idea. I'm not the accountant. I don't keep track of who donates money to me. That's not important. What's important to me is that how I can represent the people in the district. I think that that should be the focus. And when we start trying splicing wires and things like that, I think that that kind of distracts away from the real message. And the real message is who can best represent and who has been representing the people in House District 14. I think that once we start going back to people, and get politics out of it. I think that that way we can move forward with doing the work of the people. We are obligated to the people to do their work. And that's why I'm running. And that's why I'm asking for your support and your vote.
And Aaron, your corporate donors.
I don't have any corporate donors. Most of everything that's been donated to my campaign is friends and family. So there's that part. Secondly, I think that there should be caps on what should be donated to certain candidates. I think that we need to set limits on how much somebody or a corporation can go donate to a campaign. I also believe in term limits for state and federal. And I also think that we need to have a broader spec on gerrymandering, however you pronounce that word. So. I think that's something that should be voted on and brought to the polls and not something that's determined by politicians or by non-committee government.
Aaron, you're up next. You're up first on this next question. What is your platform on reproductive rights? Will you support any limitations on women's reproductive options, including abortion access?
I'm kind of a unique Republican. I'm actually a libertarian. So we're physical conservatives, but we're very liberal on social issues. My stance on abortion, my stance on production reason or rights is that government just needs to stay out of it. Once government gets involved, it gets disgusting, right? I'll give you an example. One is, say, if you were in a severe accident, right, and you were on life support, whose decision should it be that life support is removed? It shouldn't be the state. It shouldn't be a judge. It shouldn't be anybody else. It's a personal family matter, and that's how reproduction rights are. It's a personal family matter. Government just needs to stay out of it. Thanks. Bye.
Julie, your position on women's reproductive rights.
So Oregon is the only state in the country that has no restrictions on access to abortion, and I will always fight to keep it that way. A woman's economic security is so dependent on her ability to choose whether, when, and how many children she has. So I will always fight for women to have access to the full range of reproductive health care services, and that includes abortion. I grew up in a small town, and we didn't have a Planned Parenthood clinic, and we had abstinence-only education in my high school. So by the time I graduated from high school, 1 in 10 of my female classmates had either already had babies or were visibly pregnant. So very early on in my life, I became passionate about, you know, women's healthcare options and making sure that women have access to accessible, affordable contraception and that they have the right to choose when they have an unintended pregnancy.
James, your thoughts.
I'm from a family of 10. I have six sisters and one wife, by the way. I have been endorsed by NARAL, Pro-Choice Oregon, and also the Mother Pack. So my position is clear to them that I believe that a woman has a right to choose. That's their choice, and everyone else needs to stay out of it. That's always been my position. I do look further as chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. We do have a population, a growing an immigrant population, that's not receiving the same medical benefits for women. We have a Somali group that's here in Oregon and others that can't afford or can't have access to quality health care for women. I have been advocating for that for a year. I stood at the rally to mend the gap to make sure that women are getting the type of medical access that they need in a clean, safe environment, and make sure that it doesn't ruin their pockets when they're seeking this. Those things are very important to me, because if we don't move together as a human society, what are we doing? It's the right thing to do.
James, you can stay up there. The next question is, what needs to be done to make housing costs more affordable?
That's a great question. The other day when I was out knocking on doors, I ran across a lady, and she told me that her rent had gone up, and because of that, she could no longer afford a rent. So she was moving out. I have been advocating to make sure that we put rent control measures in place, and the legislators did this. We added a 90-day advance notice that the apartment owners have to provide 90-day notice before they can increase the rent. That way, they can prepare people in order to do a transition or in order to get the funds. I think that's important. But these are things that I found out on the ground talking to people. These things, I wanted to make sure that we stop eviction notice. And during my time as a mediator, I prevented a lot of that by having people come to the middle and find out what's coming. We don't need to increase the homeless rates. And if we don't put forth more legislation, more efforts to make sure that we're controlling it, and our folks that are in our low-income areas have the opportunity for sustainable, long-term, affordable housing, then we're doing a disservice. So I will continue to fight to keep that improvement.
And Julie?
So I've been going door-to-door since November, talking to voters about the things that they're most concerned about. I've knocked on over 2,600 doors since that time. And housing, affordable housing and homelessness is the number one thing that voters are bringing up at the door that they're worried about. So it's clear that we need to be doing more to make sure that housing is affordable in this state. The state legislature in the short session this year took some action to try and alleviate the housing crisis that we're facing right now. They passed a bill that lifts the preemption on inclusionary zoning, which allows cities to say any new development that's over a certain size, a portion of those units can be set aside, have to be set aside for affordable housing. So there were some really great first steps in this session, but a lot of those measures didn't quite go as far as the sponsors would have liked. So it's a solid foundation for us to build upon, but we need to be pushing those measures forward in the next session. One of the number one thing that the state can do to ensure affordable housing, particularly for low-income families, is to provide funding for units. So that's something that I will work on if I am elected.
And Aaron, making housing more affordable.
It's a complicated issue, and to be honest, I don't have the answer for that. You have raising income taxes, you have rising property taxes, you have rising everything, and unfortunately for those individuals that are on Social Security, they're on a set budget, and I'm not sure if affordable housing is really the answer, or, you know, one thing that housing that's simplified or retirement homes, I don't know if that's the answer or not. It's a very complicated answer, and I think it's a very complicated question. And to be honest, I apologize. I just don't know the answer to it. Thank you.
Julie, you're up next. Do you support taking public money to promote charter schools?
taking public money to promote charter schools.
Having public money support charter schools, okay. I assume.
Well, there was a report that was issued just recently about the charter school movement across the country, and in particular in Oregon. And there were some really concerning findings about charter schools in Oregon. You know, I think charter schools can play a really important role. They can serve some niche interests that serve different types of students. So if you have students that are high need because they have experienced teen pregnancy or have a particular interest in arts or music, they can serve that need. But this report said that charter schools in Oregon, the proportion of students that attend them, they're more likely to be white students and higher income students. So students of color and lower income students are less likely to attend charter schools. That's a big concern, because if we're providing school choice in Oregon, we need that choice to be accessible to all students and all families. The other big concern is that the performance of charter schools, as reported in this study, was not as good as traditional public schools. So that's another key concern.
And Aaron, the same question concerning using public money to support charter schools.
I think charter schools, they serve a purpose, but I think the money that we get for schools should go to public schools. We shouldn't be using those to fund private schools when our own schools are suffering a great deal. I think that we need to explore certain options with schooling, such as distance education. I think immersion schools need to be defined, and I think that we're just not doing enough. And when you ask if charter schools should use tax money, my answer is no. That should just be to public schools, and that the charter schools should have their own tuition rates. Thanks.
James, your thoughts?
Great question, and simply my answer is that no. Public funding should be for our public schools. There is a school, a middle school in Junction City, that was built back in 1936, I believe it is. The ceiling is leaking. Poor heat ventilation. The school is crumbling. I visited Laurel Elementary School in Junction City. The kids there are studying in some horrific situation. As chair of the Bethel School District Budget Committee, I know what the damage is when you move a child out of a public school over to a charter school program, because they are taking those funds with them, which means that there are kids that's going to be left behind and never have a chance to reach their fullest potential. So my answer to that question is that public money should be spent on public schools and public projects.
And who hasn't spoken on this one yet? You've all spoken on this one, yeah. All right, okay. Let's move on to the next one, and Aaron will be the first one to respond on this one. There is concern in Oregon about genetically modified food and animals. A company has engineered a genetically modified salmon. Do you support limits on genetic engineering, and do you support the labeling of modified food products?
Yes and no. So GMOs is an interesting topic. One is, with GMOs, a lot of it is we're already eating it, right? I mean, who here has eaten sweet corn? Pretty much all of us, right? So, I mean, that is a genetic modified organism, right? That is not natural. It is not something that grows out there. I think that we have fears about GMOs, and I think that some of them are valid, but a lot of that is not cause for concern. We have GMOs that go into the female plants, but not really in the male plants because pollinization or whatever. And so, and then they help the farmers, right? A lot of the GMOs can assist in, you know, weed control, and it is not those huge monstrous vegetables that you see out there on the internet. We're coming to a time when there's less and less farmers. We're coming to a time when GMOs can't help us. We have a lot of people to feed, and if we're going to just restrict, we're not helping everybody. Thanks.
James, genetically modified foods.
First off, I think that we all need to have an idea of what's in our food. So I'm in favor of labeling. I think that it gives us a better chance to look at what is in the food, and we can make an informed decision on what we're going to consume or what we're going to put into our bodies. And the reason for that is that nowadays we have so many folks with different types of diabetes and other diseases, heart disease, and they should be aware so that they can make the right decisions. Labeling is not something new. It's been around for a long time. And when we're talking about GMO and adding different chemicals to the food system, then we need to know what we're eating. We need to be aware of that, and it should be an expectation. Not only that, because it's the right thing to do. If we're talking about someone turning a profit at the expense and livelihood of others and their health conditions, that's not right. That's not right. We need to make sure that we are doing the right thing for the people. Again, this is not about politics. This is about representing people and looking out for people in their behalf. So I do agree that we need to make sure we got that we do labeling for GMOs, make sure people are aware.
And Julie.
I support labeling of GMOs. I think people have a right to know what's in their food. And give people information and make that they can make the choice themselves as to which foods they decide to purchase or not purchase. On the agricultural side, you know, my main concern is about our organic farming industry in Oregon. So we it's such an important piece of our economy, both in the statewide and here in Lane County in particular. And so we need to make sure that our organic farmers and our crops are protected. And some of that is technically making sure that the buffer zones around are respected around organic crops. And that they're not contaminated with GMO crops. So that's a really big concern for me, and it's a perspective that I'll definitely take to the legislature if I win.
Well, we have lots more questions and absolutely no more time. So we're up to closing statements, and we're going to start with James. And that's 1 minute on closing statements. Is that correct? 1 minute.
Okay, again, I want to thank City Club and Leave Women Voters and their partners for hosting this forum today. I think that it's really important that you hear from the candidates so you can make an informed decision. So the things that I've been doing since I've lived in this community have been things that have actually affected people's lives, looking out to make sure there are equal pay for women, to make sure that we are not letting people get thrown out on the streets and stuff because of rent increases. These are things that I've already been involved with. As chair of the Bethel School District Budget Committee, making sure that I watch dog where dollars are spent, advocating to make sure that we increase apprenticeship programs for our students that's not going to go to traditional college. The focus is not on politics. The focus is on people. And that's why I'm here today. And that's why I'm here asking for your support and your vote. And I think that of all the candidates here that have a real feel of people needs, no one can say that any better than I am. Pearl Buck Center, make sure that our most vulnerable people are protected. I'm asking for your vote. Thank you.
And Aaron, your closing statement.
First off, I want to say thank you. Thank you for coming and or tuning in and hearing our opinions and getting information from us. And I appreciate everything that that for you coming out and listening to us. We have some major education challenges. We have some major revenue and business challenges. They need to be addressed. One thing that I do or that I'm going to do is in Junction City to help out with the schools. There's a measure right now, and that's measure 20-242. And I have supported my pledge, or I pledge my support for everybody to vote for measure 20-242. And I challenge all of our candidates to give their support for measure 20-242, either by Facebook or on their website. We need better education. We need better schools. And the only way that we will do that is if we work together and we make that an initiative. For more information about me, go to cluitfororegon.org, and I look forward to seeing you all. Thanks.
And Julie, your closing statement.
So we've talked about a range of different issues today, which is good because legislators need to be intimately familiar with the details on a wide range of policies. And, you know, there are some candidates that are really great at giving barn-burning stump speeches, and I'm the candidate that is more likely to be the policy nerd in the corner, working out the details of the right answer for Oregon. So you can always count on me to be working on the details of our education system, of our environment, and of the policies that support working families. So I've been knocking on doors since November. I've talked to, knocked on the doors of 2,600 folks, and I've been talking to them about the issues that really matter to them. And one of the things that I've been hearing is that people are feeling like too many elected officials are not really listening to what they want, that they are focusing on their own personal agenda rather than on what the people of the district actually need. So I know that it's not just about the policies that I want to pursue. It's about listening to the people of the district and making sure they have a voice in government. Thank you.
So with appreciation to each of our candidates and to those participating here and also listening on the air, that concludes our forum, and I'm going to turn it back over to Joel Corin, who's the secretary of the City Club. Joel.
Thank you to the candidates for Oregon House District 14, Julie Fahey, James Manning, and Aaron Cluett. And thanks again to our sponsors, Sacred Earth Botanicals, PacInfo Internet Solutions, and the UO Academic Extension. Join the League of Women Voters on Thursday, April 28th, at the UO Harris Hall at 7 o'clock in the evening for the Eugene Mayor's Candidate Forum. And join us back here next week at the UO Academic Extension at the Downtown Baker Center on April 29th for the forum Earthquake Emergency Preparedness, What Can You Do? Additional information about these programs are available on the City Club website. Thank you for your time. This concludes today's program.